10, 9, 8, 7, 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. We have ignition. We have liftoff. Out and about is a go. All systems are nominal.
Yes, indeed. All systems are nominal. I'd say they're more than nominal. If that's a thing. I don't really work for NASA, but I think I have a voice for NASA. You are listening to KYRS Medical Lake Spokane on 88.1 and 92.3 FM. I am your host, Captain DJ Mave, or DJ Captain Mave, however you want to do it. And today we are going to talk about Pippin, something I'm very excited about. And my friend Misty Shipman is in the studio, and she is the director of this beauty. We also have Owen Henderson, who is the Pippin. Hi, guys. How's it going?
Hello.
Hi, Maeve. Great to see you.
Likewise. It's been forever, I feel like. It's been at least a couple months, I think.
Mm-hmm.
So much stuff going on. And you're always so busy anyways. Do you ever sleep?
No.
I was going to say.
A little bit. I got to see you recently, though, in the Shakespeare in the Park. I think that was directed by Abby Fluker for All's Well That Ends Well, I believe. And you were just wonderful in that.
Yeah, thank you very much. Yeah, that's been fun. It's been fun. It's been hot. We had to move in on Sunday because it was way too hot. I'm sure it's you guys are probably hot, even rehearsing in an air-conditioned theater.
There are definitely moments where it gets a little sticky, but mostly there are cast members going, oh, I'm kind of cold.
Oh, I don't know. I don't know if you want to say that to a director, because they'd probably make you start doing jumping jacks or something.
Well, it's a lot of Fosse, a lot of dancing. It's a dance heavy show. It's a music heavy show. So I'm glad the actors are doing well and having a great time.
You know, Pippin is one of those shows that I think everybody has heard that there's a musical Pippin, but I think there's a lot of people that don't know the story or have ever heard of the story. Has that been your experience, Owen?
Very much. If usually people ask, oh, like, I say, oh, I'm in a show, and they say, what show? And I say, Pippin. And either there is a moment of like, oh, I love that show so much. I've known it for years. It's one of my favorite shows. Or there's the, oh, I think I've heard that name before. Or there's the, is that about the guy from Lord of the Rings?
A whole different musical.
Exactly.
That's funny. So why don't we just kind of let everybody know what is the story about? And it's kind of, it's a story kind of within a story, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
Do you want to take this one?
Sure. Pippin is about the historical figure of Pippin, who is the eldest son of King Charlemagne, who was sort of this known colonizing figure who was intent upon spreading Christianity through various crusades. What really attracts me to the show Pippin, though, is that even though it was first staged 50 years ago, there's a really anti-colonialist, anti-settler narrative. You know, Pippin is seeking meaning in his life. He attempts to find it through war and glory and violence. He then seeks to find meaning through the temptations of the flesh, finally through politics, and at last in true love and ordinary life. And I think we all want our lives to have meaning, so we can all really relate to this show. We have this sort of one wild life to do with it what we will, and there's this fear that Pippin has that he's wasting his life on common, everyday, ordinary pursuits when he feels that he's meant for something truly extraordinary. So there's a group of traveling, sort of immortal, mage-like players who are leading Pippin through the Garden of Earthly Delights, seeking a glorious end for this character, whereas Pippin, he's a young man, and he's waiting for his life to begin.
Kind of the original FOMO character, isn't he? Yeah. I think the story of Pippin kind of resonates with me now, because I think in the United States, we've kind of done this job of putting ourselves as the main character in an action movie, right? Mm-hmm. And so, you know, you see these people like on January 6th who gave up. Now, there weren't like poor people storming the Capitol. Mm. These were people with good pensions, with good jobs, that had a pretty good life. But they stormed the Capitol because they, in their mind, they were the big action heroes. And I think it is a gift just to be happy with living a good life, I think. Mm-hmm. And you always talked about how much you wanted to do this play ever since I've met you.
Mm-hmm.
And how long has that been?
It's been at least 2 years since I started working at Stage Left Theater and sort of pleading and begging and insisting and hoping and dreaming of doing this show and making all of my pitches for it. And, you know, Stage Left Theater, it is one of the most recognized community theaters in the nation. I believe we have won the best production in the nation, the best directing, the best acting, best lighting design. And so we've really become this beacon in sort of liberal arts community theater for the rest of the nation and set a very, very high standard for community theater.
Yeah.
And how we do that is by taking really big risks and not being afraid to fail. So when I asked Stage Left to let me do this pretty huge musical, I had never directed anything, nothing. No, I mean, not for the stage. I've been directing film for years, but not for the stage.
Now, you directed me as a Sasquatch.
Once. I did. That was sometime after I had been pleading, please,
yes,
please let me do this show. And, yeah, and they said, all right, we're going to take this really big risk. But when you take a risk like that, you have to not be afraid to fail. You have to be willing to fail. And I think that's how we became one of the great theaters in the country. Yeah. It's willingness to give people their voices, but also being willing, if it doesn't go great, hey, we gave someone a chance.
Yeah, that's right. That's mm-hmm. right. And you know, I think for people who don't go to the theater, whenever you see a performance, especially I find like in musicals or with especially stuff with dance numbers, is the risk that the players are taking is so palpable up on stage that I can never help but be moved by that. And that's something you really don't get when you go to a movie where you can do another take, right, or something like that. That for me, it's just so in your face, and Stage Left being a theater. And, you know, full disclosure, I'm on the board of Stage Left. It's just that the risk that people take, the feeling, the 55 seats that are there, you're right there in the middle of the action. And it's pretty, pretty intense and pretty wonderful. It's like a super 3D movie, full immersion thing. Oh, and what attracted you to this role or to this show?
Oh, so I am one of those people who has loved Pippin for a long time. I found it probably close to 10 years ago.
Okay.
Now, right about the time that the Broadway revival happened in 2013, or just maybe a couple years afterwards, because I remember being devastated. Absolutely devastated when I realized it's not on Broadway anymore and the national tour is over. And I mean, I lived in the middle of Cornfield, Illinois. Like, it wasn't coming to me anyway, but I was heartbroken. I was like, oh, I'm never going to get to see this. I'm never going to get to see Patina Miller as the leading player.
Yeah.
And watch this really, really fantastic, like, wild production that incorporates circus and the triple threats of Broadway and this incredibly interesting story. I remember the first time I think I had to read the plot like three separate times to go, oh wait, no, now I get it.
Uh-huh. 'Cause
the first time I went, okay, I understand the story within the story, but what's actually going on here? But so I've loved Pippin for a long time, but I moved to Spokane just close to going on 3 months ago.
Okay.
Just a week or so before auditions happened.
Did you move from Illinois?
I moved from Champaign-Urbana, Illinois,
okay,
where I was working, and then found a job out here. And because I just was ready for a change in my life, much like Pippin, I was seeking a change. And so I came out here for this job and was looking for ways to get involved in the community, looking for ways to meet people, looking for ways to make friends. And I went, you know, you go do the things that have where go do the things you love, because that's where you'll find the people who love the things that you love.
Oh, that's good advice.
And so I said, I love the show. And even if I don't get cast, I'll at least hopefully meet people at auditions. Maybe I'll get a call back and I'll get to talk to people a little bit more. And I think I was just as shocked as anybody to get a call back for Pippin, let alone be cast. And I'm very grateful that Misty has taken a risk on me as Pippin. It's not a role I ever actually envisioned myself playing, but I have had so much fun with this, exploring a character who isn't, even if he is on stage much of the show, isn't the ostentatious or exciting character necessarily. You've got these really fabulous players and the leading player especially doing these incredible dances and songs and all the glitz and glamour that they have. And Pippin is the kind of the real person in there, so to speak.
Sort of like an audience member
exactly.
as well. Okay. It's
his first time playing the role.
Okay.
And so he's new to it all and he's kind of awestruck by it all. And he's kind of enamored with it all. And I mean, the first time I saw the show or, you know, watched a video of the show and listened to the show, I was enamored of it all. I was like, oh, I want to be one of those players. That's what I want to do. And then I got to auditions and then throughout this process going, oh no, like finding those emotional connections, finding how Pippin is there for the audience to see themselves in this show has been a lot of fun. And I've loved working with Misty on that and talking through some of the different character things and working with Aijah Moore, our leading player, and Kiki Prater, our Catherine. Mm-hmm. Both of them have been incredible to work with us in that regard as well.
Yeah. And so how did you, were you ever been in Spokane before or?
No, I took the job before.
Okay.
I took the job and then I came here and I'd found an apartment beforehand. The wonders of modern technology. I took like a little video tour of it, went good enough.
Yeah.
And I packed up my little Honda Civic and I drove 3 days out here.
Wow. What town were you from?
I grew up on a farm in southern Illinois, but most recently I came from Champaign-Urbana, which is about half the size of Spokane. It's a college town.
Good size.
Yeah, town, decent size. Lots and lots of cornfields. And I'm really enjoying Spokane. I think it's such a cute city, and I love having access to all the nature. And even if it is twice the size of the place I came from, there is a real interconnectedness I feel in this town. A lot of people talk about Spokane having a small town feel, and they don't mean that, I think, in a derogatory way. I think there is a community building here that is just different from where I came from.
Yeah. You know, I hear that from people who I know in Seattle and Portland. They talk about the freeze, you know, and if you aren't from there, you're never going to be there. But in Spokane, it doesn't take long and you're a native, it seems like. I mean, you're just here and people have things going on and we all do stuff together and it's wonderful. Mm-hmm. Misty, now are you doing some movie making in the middle of this too? As people who don't know, they should know Misty Shipley because she is the creator of so many beautiful, wonderful movies that feature a lot of local scenery, local talent, and beautiful.
Yes, I fear I did direct two films during the course of Pippin rehearsals. So the first one was called Eat Your Heart Out. That was the director of photography was Peter In Green, who you would know from Euphoria season 2 or The Idol, Breaking Bad. He has shot many, many shows, and his vision and dream is to uplift local creators and teach them the talent that he's gained from growing up on set with Clint Eastwood. So Eat Your Heart Out is a film about a freak family in the woods who make sacrifices to Satan, and a young woman who joins this family supposedly to be sacrificed, but we find out she has some ulterior motives of vengeance on her own. And then I directed a human trafficking awareness campaign for the Kalispell Tribe of Indians this last weekend, and we're working on Castle Story, which is a story about a young woman locked in a tower by choice, which is also an Airbnb, and the Craigslist Prince Charming who comes to save her. So I'm working on those, but Pippin has really been my main focus.
Okay, and I guess I probably in my introduction I should have also noticed Nate mentioned that you're a Native American person as well.
Yes,
and you bring a lot of that sensibility and that vision to your creativity and what you make.
Right, I'm a member of the Shoalwater Bay Tribe of Indians. I've been an enrolled member of that nation since I was 3 months old. I'm also a descendant of the Lower Chehalis and Chinook people in Western Washington, and I'm really hopeful that my presence at Stage Left can create space for more Indigenous people to be involved in theater, because we really are the original storytellers, and theater is a highly traditional Native American form of communication, of politics. It's something that we still utilize to this day, and on the borders of all of our territories, we used to, and we still do, meet one another and sing our traditional songs and tell our traditional stories as a way, it's really very political, as a way of forging relationships with one another, which I think is what theater ultimately does. It builds empathy, it builds connection, it builds relationships. And so Stage Left Theater is one of the few places in Spokane where I really have seen Native American people being given the space to work and have real creative agency, make choices, and have Indigenous people welcomed on stage in an environment that is safe for us. I know a lot of theaters want to say, well, you have to show up to auditions in order to be involved in our theater. And if you don't create a safe space for people to live and work with real power, with real choice-making ability, then you're bringing people to a table with rotten food. And my belief is that we need to get rid of the table, get rid of the structure, get rid of the food, and rebuild together, not in a hierarchical way, but in a circle in which all of us have our voices heard. That's something I would love to see more of in Spokane. And I hope that me directing this show and creating space for Indigenous cast members and BIPOC cast members is going to start building that sort of anti-colonial space for us to live.
Yeah, well, thank you. That was very well said, and I concur. I just think that's wonderful. I was going to kind of back up a little bit and talk about a lot of your movies concentrate. I wouldn't call that almost like a light horror vibe to them, I would say. Would that be fair to say?
I do like to dabble in horror. It's been said that I basically do very intense dramatic work that usually revolves around cult-like church environments, just because that's something that was a big part of my life. But I am kind of veering toward dramedy and things that are more lighthearted and fun as I progress in my career. And I've been working as a director for 5 years, and I've told these really deep, dark stories that I wanted to tell. And now I'm goofing off and trying to always make room for new actors who haven't been able to work on set before to get a chance to have a leading role.
Yeah, wonderful, wonderful. Okay, we're going to break for our 20-minute after-the-hour stuff, and then we're going to come right back. But I'm going to play a little bit of music from Pippin, and as I load up my computer with all the stuff I have to play. So thanks for listening, and stay tuned. We're going to be right back in about 5 minutes.
Its season, everything has its time. Show me a reason and I'll soon show you a rhyme. Cats fit on the windowsill, children fit in the snow. So why do I feel I don't fit in anywhere I go? Rivers belong where they can ramble. Eagles belong where they can fly. To be where my spirit can run free. Gotta find my corner of the sky. Every man has his daydreams. Every man has his goal. People like the way dreams have us sticking to the soul. Thunder clouds have their lightning. Nightingales have their song. And don't you see, I want my life to be something more than long. Rivers belong where they can ramble. Where my spirit can run free. Gotta find my corner of the sky. Sorry, men seem destined to settle for something small. But I won't rest until I know I'll have it all. So don't ask where I'm going, just listen when I'm gone. And far away you'll hear me singing softly to the dawn. Rivers belong where they can ramble. Eagles belong where they can fly.
Tune in Mondays at 4 p.m. for Solidarity Spokane, the Inland Northwest's local labor hour, hosted by Cat Sabotage, elevating the voices of everyday workers and worker organizations, fighting for your rights in the workplace and fostering community solidarity. Join us here to reclaim control over your own destiny by reclaiming the conditions and products of your labor. That's Mondays at 4 p.m. here on KYRS Thin Air Community Radio. An injury to one is an injury to all.
Hi, this is Jeremy Whittington from Stage Left Theater. KYRS Thin Air Community Radio provides our region with information that might be omitted, overlooked, or even censored by mainstream media. Your radio station is powered by the communities they serve, and our radio programs are as rich and diverse as the Spokane community itself. Please make a pledge today by texting GIVE KYRS to 44321. Your support ensures that KYRS can continue to celebrate the rich diversity of our community.
This is your KYRS live and local calendar for July 20th through the 23rd. Saturday, Lindsay Lee, Benjamin Oscar, and others at the Goody Bar and Grill. Get loud in the library with Floating Crowbar, Free Whiskey, and Betsy Rogue at the downtown Spokane Public Library. Cannonball with The Rub, Kung Fu Vinyl, Vika and the Velvets, and others as Second and Cannon in Brown's Edition. Dr. Cece and the Elixir at the Hilliard Built Cornhole Tournament and the Jason Perry Band at Chan's Red Dragon. Sunday, Corey Aileen at Iron Horse in the Valley, sole proprietor at Arborcrest, and Armed for Apocalypse and Odyssey at the Big Dipper. Monday, open mic with Kier Mara and Ben 10 at the Red Room, Tabitha Smith and Jerry Lee Raines at Riverfront Eats, and open mic at Live Entertainment. Monday and Tuesday, open jam at Jackson Street. Tuesday, Sean Kavanaugh at Rocket Market, karaoke with Ryan at the Eagles Pub in Cheney, and A Train to Nowhere at Zola. For an entire hour of local musicians, tune into Sounds of Spokane every Sunday night at 8 on KYRS.
Washington Physicians for Social Responsibility, Undue Medical Debt, and Whole Washington are holding a town hall. Healthcare, not warfare, an open dialogue about the failures of the current for-profit healthcare system. WPSR will be sharing their demand access program, and Whole Washington will also be present to discuss the Washington Health Trust. Following up with a Q&A session, July 27th, 2 to 4 p.m., Spokane Central Library, 906 West Main Avenue, and that, of course, is in Spokane, Washington. Hey, welcome, everybody. Welcome back to Out and About. I have my friends Owen and Misty here, and we're talking about Pippin. Now, Pippin, it seems like you have the ability to either stage that in one act or two act with an intermission. Which route did you guys go?
So we went ahead and went with the 2013 Broadway revival version, which does have an intermission. So the show runs, I believe, about 2 hours total. Okay. with a really epic climax at the end of Act One. So you'll have to come and see that.
Yeah, and I got my tickets and Sunday. Sunday in August. Mm-hmm. Because I guess we should tell people how do people get tickets to go see this show? I forgot to do that.
Well, Pippin is running August 2nd through 18th, and I believe you can go to stageleftheater.org, mm-hmm. I believe.
That's correct.
And purchase tickets from the website. You can also call Stage Left, and they can reserve tickets for you as well.
Yeah. And but I looked, I was going to say that I looked, and there were actually quite a few tickets are going pretty fast, it seems like.
Mm-hmm.
And what... Is that kind of just word of mouth, or did you get a lot of people saying, oh, I'm so glad you're bringing Pippin here. I've always wanted to see it here. And
I think people were really interested in how we were going to do Pippin at Stage Left Theater.
I am too.
Because Jeremy, the artistic director at the time, had offered to rent the Magnuson at Gonzaga for me, which was a 300-seat theater. But I said that, you know, because I'm neurodivergent and autistic and I have quite a few access needs, I said I would feel a lot more comfortable at Stage Left doing it there in our little black box in our 60-seat theater, because that really became a safe space for me. You know, people are very, very considerate of particular needs. Even, you know, I would say loud noises are really hard for me. And Jeremy would be like, I'm turning on the vacuum cleaner now. So I wouldn't, you know, panic. And every little thing like that, it just continues to build safety for people who otherwise might not be able to have their voices heard. So I felt comfortable to do it at Stage Left and confident that that was the right place for this
show. And
there's
a lot of people in this show.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, not that Stage Left has staged some pretty big mm-hmm. musicals before. Was that a challenge as far as getting that many people on that stage? Or
no.
No? Okay, good.
No, it wasn't a problem at all. The stage is bigger than you would think it is.
It goes back a ways, doesn't it?
Yeah.
And Owen, I was going to ask you, when you were doing your character, and were there some things that you've learned about your character as time goes on, rehearsing this person?
You know, Pippin, I think in the character description, it says he's 18 to 21 years old. So I am ever so slightly older than Pippin.
Okay.
Not that I have that much hindsight on what I was like. I mean, I remember very clearly being 21 years old. But I, for the longest time, you know, Pippin, he wants so badly to do something important with his life. And that is far and away the most important thing to him. It doesn't matter what his personal relationships are like with certain people. He seems to care a lot about what his father thinks of him, but mostly he cares about doing something fulfilling with his life. And so if that means he hurts people around him, mm-hmm. or if that means he kind of just leaves the people who are around him, he, at least on the outside, doesn't seem to care that much about it. And for the longest time, as someone who just listened to the show or watched bits and pieces of it, I was very turned off by that. I went, oh, this guy's just kind of a selfish jerk. I don't see myself in that. And I hope I don't come across that way in my life. And I was pretty dismissive of Pippin's want to do something important with his life, even though I myself feel a similar urge to be fulfilled, as do we all, I think, to find fulfillment in something.
Yeah.
And I've definitely, through the rehearsal process, through my conversations with Misty, with Lorna, our choreographer, and with the other actors, definitely come much more around to seeing him as a whole person and not just kind of pigeonholing him as, you know, kind of an unlikable, kind of bratty, entitled boy who grew up rich. He's literally the king's son. He got sent away to a very nice university, and then he comes back and kind of demands that people, or at least the way I first watched the show, was that he comes back and he demands that people accommodate him and make his life fulfilling for him. And through this rehearsal process and through reading the script a lot more and doing some more dives into just watching other performances, I've gotten a much better sense of who this character is, why, like, the need he, the hole that he's trying to fill in his life, and what that could be and why that could be, and gained a lot more sympathy and empathy for him. And I hope that comes through in the performance. I know watching these other performances definitely showed me, it's one thing to read the words on the page. It's one thing to listen to the words in a song. It's another thing to see a person's face while they're just absolutely heartbroken and desperate to find some kind of meaning in their life.
Yeah. Yeah. I think, well said. I'm not big on, like, the titles of baby boomers and Gen X and millennial and all that stuff, but it seems to me like the younger people that I work with in the fire department, it was, I really thought they had a lot more wisdom about their lives and what they were doing with their lives, and didn't buy into the narrative so much that people wanted to sell them. And so I think everybody does want to do something with their lives, but I kind of wonder if this, when this play was written, was it 1972, I think?
It premiered in 72.
72. Yeah, so I kind of wonder if that, you know, that was sort of like everybody. You were put on earth to do grand things, you know?
And sort of that American exceptionalism.
Yeah, American exceptionalism, exactly. And I kind of wonder, you know, that makes it a little bit, you have a wisdom to bring that character to, like, this person would be today, you know, that there is empathy for this person and wisdom.
I think the conversations that we've had, Misty, have really helped me flesh that out and figure out how to make the, because like you've talked about so many times before, being so invested in the first time you saw the show, being so invested in this character and his journey. And I remember the first time you said that, I went, wow, I never felt that way. And figuring out, how do I get people to feel that way? How do I get people to care about something that initially turned me off?
Yeah.
And I think maybe that's helped me figure out, okay, well, I know what not to do.
Right.
Not that these other amazing performances are the wrong thing to do, but I know what I perceived in this character, and I know why he might come across that way, and how to maybe incorporate elements, because he's not a perfect person by any stretch of the imagination, but how to incorporate those elements while still getting the audience to really actually care about him and want the best for him.
Yeah.
And so I hope that ends up coming across.
Well, you're doing the job of an actor, right? I mean, that's what we have to do, is take those things and all that stuff that's inside of you and stick it in that Play-Doh mold and make it look like something, you know, like this character. And so I'm really excited to watch you do it. I mean, I understand you all did all the choreography and the dance numbers, got those kind of out of the way before you even did like a read through, right? Was that correct?
Yes, is actually true. Well, this is a good segue to talk a little bit about Fosse and about the character of Pippin. So this is a very Fosse-heavy show. I think this is probably the most Fosse that we have seen in Spokane in a long time. And this is a musical that's not afraid to be a musical. It's not ashamed of the fact that it's a musical. They're not hiding the dance breaks as people walking around on stage purposefully wearing backpacks or something. You know, it's not embarrassed about itself being a musical where people are singing and dancing throughout the entire thing in these highly stylistic Fosse mannerisms. And Bob Fosse, he wasn't a perfect person either, not unlike our Pippin, but he was the perfect person to put this show on. He was also a dreamer and someone who wanted so much for his life and believed in what his life could be and what he wanted to be, which was that he wanted to be a star. He didn't want to be a choreographer.
Crazy great dancer.
A crazy great dancer, but not a star, I guess. And so all of the things that Fosse was the most ashamed about himself, whether it was that he walked, you know, with a stoop, he had bad posture, his legs bowed out, whatever it was, he took all of those things and made them the iconic signatures of his dance style. style that we all do to this day. He emphasized the weirdness and the wrongness of the way that our bodies can move, which is so perfect for these players and for Pippin as well, who's learning this kind of style as he goes along. And we've talked about Pippin being this kind of spoiled, bratty kid who wants something out of his life, but that is what makes him the perfect prey for the group of traveling players who are also a significant part of this show. Because you think that this show is about Pippin's journey of finding himself, but what you do not realize is that he isn't making these decisions on his own. He's being led by a group of people, a group of spirits, as it were, who do not want what's best for him, and who have done this song and dance about 100 times before, maybe 200, maybe 500. And this show is meant to end in calamity, destruction, and disaster. And so there's really this element of bathos with Pippin that I've been trying to tap into, this inevitability of demise. It's an Icarus-like character in a lot of ways, you know, flying too close to the sun, longing for that greatness. I think a lot of us in theater or in the arts, in film, writers, directors, poets, we have been told from a very young age that we're brilliant, that we're geniuses, that we're going to go so far and we're going to make such a huge impact on the world. And then we kind of roll into this gifted kid burnout where there's so much despair because we want so much and we can't have it. The same way that Fosse, he could have an Oscar, he could have an Emmy, he could have a Tony in the same year. He wasn't happy.
Yeah.
And so I really see a lot of, perhaps myself, in this story. And that's where that buy-in comes for me, is what do you do when you know that you have what it takes, but you can't get there no matter how hard you try? What do you do? How do you live with that? Can you settle? Is there something else? I don't know.
As a director, have you had to kind of do the same thing where you have a performer and you push and you say, well, I want this, but we're going to have to settle for this because, in my mind, I have this vision, but in your mind, your vision is different than my vision. And who's to say that your vision isn't better than my vision? I guess I'm speaking from personal experience of being in that spot of directing somebody, some people, and saying, well, you know what? I think that's going to be whatever's going on there. I've tried, but I have to back off now at this point because this person is developing their own thing and I'm going to have to live with that.
Oh, no, I don't really experience that so much. I believe I'm a very collaborative director. I want to be a very collaborative director. So what I see my role as is helping the actor find the part and give the performance that they want to give. So I always say when we're on set, there's 10, 15, 20 people on crew who are there to support the two people on cast to give the best performance that they can possibly give. We are all here for the actors. It's very thrilling and exciting when things that completely came from my imagination are realized on the stage or on the screen. That's a wonderful feeling, but it's not about me at the end of the day. It's about telling the story in the best way possible, utilizing the immense talent that I have in the room, listening to them, listening to their suggestions, understanding that I don't know everything. This is my first main stage full production I have ever directed. The actors are teaching me things every single day, and they've been extremely kind and respectful and thoughtful of me and my feelings and helping me also find my creative voice as they're developing their characters.
Have you found it to be a lot different than directing for the screen?
I think it's very different than directing for the screen because on the screen you're doing little microcosms bit by bit. You know, you might be doing a wide and a mid and coverage and inserts, and you could be saying the same line. Okay, take that line back, say it again, like and over and over and over. You're working to get the exact performance that you want, while always listening to the actor and being excited by the choices that they're making. When they're using their creativity and imagination, they will always do something that you don't expect. They might just improvise something in the moment. Whereas for the stage, Jeremy Whittington has taught me that every single seat in the audience is the camera. And that's kind of how I think about it, is always building that show from the ground up with every single seat in mind. And film is beautiful and it lasts in perpetuity, but theater is ephemeral and it lasts for a moment. And when you are all there and present in the room, taking that emotional journey together, the audience is really a part of the story, and very much so in Pippin, because the audience is directly waylaid and asked to participate and join in this production.
I'm so excited to see this. Well, and then why don't we got to do our 20 minute to the hour stuff. Tell the folks once again how they can come and see Pippin.
You can find tickets at stagelefttheater.org, I believe. You can call Stage Left to have them reserve some tickets. We run from August 2nd through August 18th, Thursday through Sunday.
Okay. All right. We're going to do our business and we'll be right back. You're listening to KYRS, Medical Lake Spokane.
Hey there, folks. Join me for a musical trip along Americana Avenue. Now on Wednesday evenings from 6 to 8 p.m. Hear the greatest progressive songwriters from yesterday and today. Each week, I'll feature a specific artist and a vinyl spin of the week. It's music that plays to the human condition, Wednesdays at 6 on Thin Air Community Radio.
KYRS wants your brand new car! Well, not really. Yes, indeed, it's a great feeling to finally get another car after the old one's been breaking down over and over. It's another great feeling to get even more use out of an old car. Here's how. Donate it to KYRS. Car donors get a membership, a tax deduction, and the satisfaction of really helping out. Just call toll-free 855-KYRS-CAR. That's 855-597-7222.
Hong Kong.
Out and About receives support from Boots Bakery and Lounge, specializing in vegan bistro fare and gluten-free baked goods. Located in the Saranac Commons, 19 West Main Street. Open 7 a.m. through 7 p.m. Monday through Saturday, 7 a.m. through 5 p.m. Sundays. Full menu and information at bootsbakery.com. Welcome back, everybody. We are talking to my friends, Misty and Owen, and we're talking about Pippin, which is playing at Stage Left Theater, starting the beginning of August and running 3 weeks, right?
Yes.
Yeah, that's a good run. How was, you know, you have such a wide experience of folks that were doing the dancing, and was that tough to get everybody up to speed on dancing, or was it, because, I mean, you weren't the choreographer, but you were there, I'm sure, watching.
Well, I cast really good dancers. We had a pretty great turnout for the show. I talked about it for 2 years leading up to auditions, so everyone was very aware, or many people were very aware, and then Stage Left publicized it really well. I was able to cast people who I think are pretty strong dancers. They picked up the choreography astoundingly quickly, and as well as those, like, really tiny, isolated, fussy movements that were so essential to telling the story of Pippin.
Cool.
I liked watching Lorna choreograph as well. She's a genius. She's wonderful. It's great to have a wonderful relationship with a choreographer who's so profoundly talented. I've learned so much from her. And all the time, she knew I wanted Fosse, and that's what she gave me. So.
Yay. Oh, that's so cool. And Owen, you came. Were you doing theater and stuff before you came here? I think you must have been.
I've done theater as like a hobby, you know, since high school. But actually, journalism and radio is my profession.
Oh, no kidding.
I work for Spokane Public Radio. And so journalism is my day job. And then whenever I've had time, whether that was, you know, the shows in high school, some community theater, I did some shows with a student group in college, and then a little bit more community theater before I came here. So theater's just been... It's been kind of not just a hobby, but also, you know, a built-in social life for me. It's like, if I'm going to be busy, at least I'll be busy doing something I like with people who also like that thing that I can bond with.
Yeah. And that's the thing. There are so many acting opportunities in Spokane. It just is endless, it seems like. And in fact, that's kind of the downside, is that oftentimes there's, you know, your friends are in shows, but you're cast in other shows and... running, like that's just happening with me and Heather's right now. I want to go see Heather's, but I can't because it's going to running concurrently with my show. So
I was just having a conversation with someone this morning, doing the Spokane Valley Summer Theater show, Buddy, the Buddy Holly musical.
Yes.
And we were realizing that, like, oh, maybe I can see one of your show weekends and maybe you can see one of my show weekends.
Yeah.
Because they basically overlap.
Yeah, it's incredible how much. And you know, the public radio station there, that's in my old station, my old fire station.
Firehouse,
yeah. Now I was never at that. Was my station 3. I was the captain of station 3.
Mm-hmm.
But it had since moved a little bit further down the road in a new place. But you know, do you have the plaque that's in front of there with all the words? I wrote that. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. There we go.
Yeah, I was reading it one day walking to work, and I was like, dang, these words sound familiar. Mm-hmm. So I went and looked up the words on my computer. Oh, yeah, they asked for this copy like 3 years ago from the union. But anyway, and so, Misty, what's going to be next after this? I know you have so many irons in the fire. So normally I wouldn't feel like this is a fair question to ask somebody because they're in the middle of a big project, but I know you.
Yeah, well, I do want to speak to theater. I think kind of what Owen was saying was that we build so much community and family in the theater, and I think so many of us are longing for real and true connections with other people where we are allowed to bring our whole authentic selves to these spaces where we're working to tell stories, which is such an age-old human thing to do, to stand in a room and tell stories to one another. I think that for me, I had always really longed to find a place where I could feel welcome and at home, and my experiences in the church were sort of questionable because it was always about subverting yourself and subverting your identity and your talent and your ability and always lowering yourself. And you could never sing for your own pleasure or your own happiness or to entertain your friends. You had to sing for the Lord. And if you sang well, you could take no credit for that. It was only God working through you, which was ultimately, it became a kind of dark way of living and thinking about life. And so I have found so much joy and life in being in the theater where we're allowed to sort of not be seen as broken people, but as whole people who can work toward even greater wholeness as a unit, being fully accepted in our diverse identities. So I'd love to keep doing theater. I want to keep directing. I'm kind of shopping around the idea of doing West Side Story around town. I'd love to do that show. It's another favorite of mine. And then I received funding to do a band movie. So we're shooting a feature film in Spokane next year between April 6th to 16th. And of course, I'm casting for Castle Story right now. So you can find that information on my Facebook. I didn't post it anywhere. But you can email me at mermaidmotelmedia@gmail.com or find me on Instagram at mermaidmotelmedia and get that information.
Now,
from me.
I always wanted to know about that handle of yours, the Mermaid Motel.
So I'm from a reservation in Western Washington, and we are directly on the oceanfront. So all of the roads are called things like Mermaid Lane or Buoy Road or, you know, Ocean Shores.
Yes.
So being from that place where everything is about the sea, because the sea is what you walk out of your home and there is the Pacific Ocean. I mean, it doesn't get any grander than that.
Yeah.
So I just brought a little bit of myself into my handle. And also I love Lana Del Rey, and Mermaid Motel is one of her songs from maybe 2010.
So
this
cool.
is my little homage to the one and only.
I want to back up a little bit, talk about, we just got a few minutes left here, but, mm-hmm. you know, don't you think that, you know, you're talking about your religious upbringing, and I come from a similar circumstance, that doing theater is a real gift to people. Mm-hmm. I mean, we enjoy doing it, but I think it's, people think that you do it because you get the applause or you get whatever. I just, when I look out and I see somebody smiling, you know, especially if it's supposed, they're supposed to be smiling. It, to me, I feel like that is such a wonderful thing that you've given somebody, especially during times that are really rough right now. Mm-hmm. And not that the times are so rough, but just the hyper awareness of things going on 24/7 and you know, everybody's nervous system is just on the fritz, and you can give people a place to be and be absorbed in a story, and you know, you're not making any money doing it. You know, I think that for a greater good, I feel like theater probably does more good than any church has ever done.
I agree. And I also think that our work as artists, when it does come from that place of wholeness and well-being, it can also be a gift to God, maybe even better than anything that you could do in a church, because you're being your whole self.
Yeah. And I think it was St. Irenaeus said that the joy of God is shown fully in a human being fully alive.
Oh, I love that.
Yeah. I'm going to play another song, but before we go, why don't we tell folks one more time how they can get tickets to see Pippin, and anything else you want to say.
Well, so...
Yeah, what are you doing next?
What
Owen?
Am I doing next? I think I'm going to sleep for a little while. I work the morning shift at Spokane Public Radio. I'm the morning edition host, and so I wake up at 3 a.m.
Oh my goodness.
To get to the station at 4, and I am at rehearsal usually until 9 or 9:30. So I sleep when I can, but I think before I jump into any shows, although I have my eye on a couple of shows coming up in the future to audition for, but maybe several months in the future, I think I need a little bit of time to recuperate personally. But I was going to say that one of the things that drew me to theater is the same thing that drew me to journalism, is that storytelling, is telling a story that has the ability to move someone to change something in the world. And I think that you both just spoke so eloquently about the power of theater, and that I don't have much more to say about that. But yes, so what's next for me? My bed.
Okay. Sounds good. And you know, I want to leave you with this too, as far as storytelling is, you know, we would work 24-hour shifts, and when you'd come in the morning, you'd pour yourself a cup of coffee, and unless you had to go on a call or they were out on a call, the shift that you were leaving, and you would sit around the kitchen table at the firehouse, and you would tell stories. Mm-hmm. You would tell stories. People would stay a couple hours beyond their shift to hear about the stories that were going on, the calls you went on the day before, all the stuff. And so where you are at is a temple of storytelling before it was even a radio station, just to let you know that. So do we already tell people how they could see the show again?
Yeah. Come see our show, please. It is August 2nd to August 18th, and you can find tickets at stageleft.org. And thank you, Maeve, for having us on your show.
Yes, thank you.
Oh, I'm so glad you folks made it, and we'll do this again sometime. And everybody, you are listening to KYRS Medical Lake Spokane. Jim Hightower, he'll be coming on here any minute, so we're gonna play a little bit of music, and then we're out of here. Thanks for listening. Bye. See you next week.
Patching the roof and pitching the hay is not my idea of a perfect day. When you're extraordinary, you gotta do extraordinary things. not the type who loses sleep over the size of the compost heap. When you're extraordinary, you think about extraordinary things. Oh, I once knew a man. He lived each day the same, safe and sane and swell. And when they told me he died, I didn't cry. All I could say was, how could they tell? Oh, looking at life from deep in a rut may give you a view of the sunshine, but it's unnecessary for some. The doorboards are leaking and the chimney's in need of repair. If the garden has brambles and the yard is a shambles, well, I'm terribly sorry, but I don't care. I've got to be someone who lives all of his life in superlatives. I'm extraordinary. I gotta do extraordinary things. The fact that I'm special.
Substack. Find us at jimhightower.substack.com.
Hi, this is Owen.
Spencer.
Rylan.
And Jesse of Acrasia, and you're listening to
KYRS!
Medical Lake in Spokane at 88.1 and 92.3 FM.
Thin
Air
Radio!
KYRS Medical Lake and K222BG Dartford, 88.1 FM, 92.3 FM, Thin Air Community Radio.
The following program was pre-recorded.
KYRS Thin Air Community Radio receives support from Eastern Washington University Running Start, where high school students can earn tuition-free credit before graduating. Applications at ewu.edu/runningstart.
New York, this is Democracy Now!
It is my intention to go out and earn this nomination and to win.
Yeah! On her first full day campaigning, Vice President Kamala Harris secured the backing of enough Democratic delegates to win the party's presidential nomination following President Biden's stunning decision to step aside of ending the presidential race. The Democratic National Committee is now planning to hold a virtual roll call vote to lock in Harris as the party's nominee before the Democratic National Convention even begins. We'll get the latest and speak to a former Harris campaign worker who resigned from the Biden administration over Israel's war on Gaza. Plus, we go to Israel, where a group of public health professors are calling for an immediate ceasefire to prevent a polio outbreak after the highly infectious virus was detected in sewage in Gaza. Then to Bangladesh. Over 170 people have been killed during mass student protests. The government has arrested over 2,500 protesters in a sweeping crackdown.
This illegal government is trying to uproot students. Every moment, injured students are coming into this hospital. No local media is covering this properly.
All that and more coming up. Welcome to Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, War, Peace, and the Presidency. I'm Amy Goodman. Vice President Kamala Harris has secured enough pledges of support from delegates to the Democratic National Convention to win the party's presidential nomination with no obvious challenger. On Monday, Harris traveled to Wilmington, Delaware, where she rallied campaign staff and supporters. Harris defended the Biden administration's accomplishments and referenced her work as a courtroom prosecutor who went after perpetrators of all kinds.
Predators who abused women. Fraudsters who ripped off consumers. Cheaters who broke the rules for their own gain. So hear me when I say, I know Donald Trump's type.
The Democratic National